Good morning. Today is Tuesday, June the 22nd. Joining us this morning is UC Cooperative Advisor and proud mama, Yana Valakovic. Good morning.
Good morning, Brian.
A whiteboard, huh?
A whiteboard.
That really works well in radio. Just one of those comments just as the music's ending. Oh, gee. All right. I'm going to have to find something worthy of whiteboard for your question here this morning.
All right. So that's an inside joke. So everyone listening is wondering, what are they talking about? Yeah. I was talking about a studio where the engineer was on the other side of the glass and we had a whiteboard to
communicate instead of using words. Yes.
Yeah. It didn't work very well.
Really?
No.
Yeah. And then you put my handwriting into work and there's no chance.
I couldn't write that fast. Like, echo in my ear, please. Oh. Stop.
All righty. This.
Wait, you're asking me? I thought I was asking
you. No, I got you on this one.
Oh, man. I liked it last time. I got to ask you, though.
Well, see, you didn't grab early.
Oh, shoot.
You were too busy trying to disrupt everything. Why is an expensive but non-productive possession called a white elephant?
Oh, we're sticking with a white.
Yes.
An expensive but non, what was it?
Productive.
Productive. Well, white elephants aren't common, so that's one thing. I have no idea why a white elephant gift is a white elephant gift, but they're kind of fun.
This is said to have originated with the King of Siam, who supposedly gave white elephants to members of his court he wished to ruin. White elephants at that time were considered sacred and were not allowed to do work, yet they still had to be fed and cared for.
Well, it's a burden.
Thus, a possession that must be maintained at high cost, but that offers no productive output in return, is said to be
a white elephant. Well, I don't think of white elephant gifts as a burden necessarily. We've moved. on from that. They're more silly.
Oh, I see.
Right? Yeah. I mean, you have a holiday party and a white elephant. Right?
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
You know, it's like
yeah. That's called repackaging, right? Or regifting?
Regifting, yes.
Yeah, yeah. Jeez. Maybe that's why you're so high on so many social calendars.
That's right. No one invites me anymore.
Yeah. Oh, we were down in Sonoma County almost 2 weeks ago now. And it was amazing, both Ange and I. We were on the coast and then driving on the east side of Santa Rosa. How quickly it got dry.
Mm-hmm.
The humidity just absolutely disappeared. And then almost a sensation of arid.
Right.
Yeah, it was particularly, you know, being a fog boy.
Yeah.
You know, it was like, wow, this is really amazing. And I guess most of the days it's been like 104, 105, 106.
Yeah.
In the Napa area, which
yeah.
can't be all that healthy for the grapes. Or maybe they just really grow very well in those times. But it really struck how dry it was.
Mm-hmm.
And I could almost envision, with a 10 or 15 mile an hour breeze, how it could burn that grass so quickly and go up and over and up and over and lights out.
And just burn the whole state down.
Well, outside of the fog belt. So what do you look towards, or what does the state look towards as far as a barometer? Is it the fire danger, you know, in the bent reed with the humidity? Do you look at fuel on the ground? Are the condition of the trees and then the flora that's how do you determine? Because, you know, for me, Death Valley is supposed to be hot.
Right.
It's supposed to be arid. So the fact that it's hot and arid right now, to me, doesn't so.
Yeah.
It always is.
Right.
But some of these other, it's, you know, Sacramento now is getting to that point, too, where it's 106, 108, who cares?
It's
been that way forever, and, well, it's miserable even in the fall. What do you look to as indicators?
Sure. So, yes, it's really hot and really dry. And I think the most, the interesting part about all of that is the dead fuels and the live fuels are both extremely dry right now. So there's been some research done out of a university in the Bay Area where the focus has been looking at what is the live fuel moisture like in various vegetation types. And what they're seeing is that these trees really didn't recover over the winter because there just wasn't any really significant precipitation available for them to store a bunch of water.
So they didn't plump out?
They didn't plump out, right. But the other component out is the dead fuels, right? So dead fuels are measured in different diameters, and the heavies, the big logs and such, never took on moisture this year. So we've got stuff that is essentially cured from the previous season coming into this season. And so if we get fire in our forest environments, oftentimes if you have a fire in June in a forest environment, you know, those big fuels won't really engage because they've got the moisture. They're like sponges from the winter, and they're hanging on to that moisture. Well, that's not the case this year. So
kind of like they've been in a drying shed.
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah, a hop kiln, so to speak. But, you know, so what does that mean? It means that there's not a lot of resistance in the landscape to fire, and it means that if we get ignitions and if we get wind on top of that, that's going to be a big deal.
Now, what about the critters and the bugs that are often inside eating? I mean, if there's no moisture, do they not consume the dead or the diseased as readily, or is this an opportunity for them to really take off and do very well?
Well, I guess I'll need to be reincarnated as a critter or a bug in the future to know the answer to that question. I don't know, actually. I mean, you need moisture for lots of different chemical reactions to take place. And so, you know, decomposition is a product where enzymes are released and that breaks down cell walls. So without moisture, that process doesn't go forward. Whether or not the bugs, as you say, can persist without the amount of water that they're used to and, you know, how that affects populations, it's probably going to be impactful to some degree.
But not enough to balance out the drying.
Not enough to balance out the drying.
Fair enough. and the moisture couldn't come back with one storm like we had last week.
No.
This is a more prolonged process.
Yeah. Right.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:19.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music. ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbra Streisand, Billy Joel, and The Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long on 980 AM. We are easy radio. Easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music, and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music. Easy radio, 980 AM.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Jana Velikovic. No, we weren't talking whiteboards this time.
Okay, nope.
Trying a little bit of memory lane, and unfortunately my memory lane isn't much of a lane anymore.
Well,
it would be interesting trying to figure out how close I could come to everybody who's ever been on the show.
How close to the...
To accurate.
Oh.
Yeah, because we are... Well, I guess we just blew through 39 years? Yeah, 39 years last month, 2 months ago. It's like, okay. How close could I get to whatever number of people, how close could I get?
Right.
I fear it would be 50%. Maybe a tad more. Maybe a tad less. Yeah. And miss some real obvious ones, which would pain me no end. So we got drought.
We got drought, yep.
And there doesn't seem to be an awful lot of question about that aspect of it. I've had folks say, well, it's not the fact we didn't get that much moisture, it's the fact we didn't get that much snow.
Correct.
And so there's no backfilling in after the water runs off into the ocean. There's nothing there for June, July, August coming out of the hills to keep the rivers up and the lakes full.
Mm-hmm.
It really is an interesting balance. So it's not just moisture. It's when and how and what form.
Correct. correct. And it depends on where you are. I mean, we're not so much impacted by a snowpack in the North Coast, but if you're in the, if you're somewhere fed by one of those streams coming out of the Sierras, yeah, the snowpack really
we got issues.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you look at the reservoir levels and they're way down, and yeah, I mean, it's a real challenge.
So in that kind of a scenario, we have seen through our part of the state where somebody, I mean, 101 was this way, trimmed back pretty readily. Really weird, though. I mean, if you were a botanist or a tree gal, you're going to look at that oak tree that got trimmed.
You're talking about north of Willits?
Yeah. You're going to go, why not just cut the silly thing down? You've mutated it so hard that it's going to be off balance. Just take it down.
I've been puzzled by the same thing. But did you happen to go south on that section right after the snow damage that came in this year? There was an incredible wet snow event that brought hundreds of trees down in that tight little corridor, that little canyon.
Right, right.
And so that prompted what I mean, I don't really know. I mean, I'm just, what I've been observing was a whole lot of cleanup work. And then what followed from that seemed to be some additional tree trimming.
So it wasn't fire management related.
I don't know. I mean, certainly in Caltrans court.
Or it doesn't feel that way.
Doesn't entirely feel that way, but it doesn't feel like it didn't hurt. I mean, I think it's helpful.
Well, yeah, if the tree's down or the branches are gone, you know. It's...
But there are some odd choices, I agree. But...
Yeah, and then some other areas that didn't get touched at all on state highways still.
But I think it got stimulated by the emergency that was created from all the trees that came down during that snow event. And so then there was some concentrated activity around those sections.
Didn't it start in the last fall?
No.
Some of the trimming, that's a this calendar year event?
Yeah.
Okay. So it may have maybe branches yet to fall?
Well, it just, you know, wet, heavy snow.
Yeah, snap those. Trees. No, I'm talking about the ones where, well, remember 299?
Yeah.
We always had the little squares you could tell if the chip trucks were running.
Right. Right. Yeah.
That way on some of these other roads, and you go, now, wait a minute, if we're trying to keep fire likelihood down, and if it's there, not to have these bridges where it can jump highways really easily, I would think that those would just kind of come by with a pole saw, industrial size, of course, and just knock those things back. Are we missing something here, or is it just maybe manpower?
I don't know. I don't know the answer. I don't exactly know how Caltrans thinks about these issues and how they manage them. And we do know that trailers and chains cause a lot of ignitions.
Particularly drugged by retired firemen. Yes.
So managing fuels along roadsides, cigarettes being thrown out the window, chains sparking, various things.
That was something. My brother's building a house. It's one of those cut into the hillsides.
Wheels that come off, right, on the car fire.
He was talking about people throwing cigarettes. I mean, the place is absolutely arid. It's around Glen Allen. Absolutely arid. I mean, even the dry grass is kind of tipping over or snapped.
Yeah.
You'll get five or six cigarette butts thrown on the side of the road every single day. And you go, that educational message obviously still isn't getting out.
The one less spark has not quite. not quite.
Maybe they need a spark inside the head instead of, you know, outside the car. It's interesting how some people get it and some people don't. That's got to be a frustration point for you, too.
Right. Not that everybody sees the world the way I do. Yeah.
or some of the real obvious mannerisms aren't being recognized for really what they are.
Sure, I'm sure medical professionals feel the same way in our habits that we are refusing to break.
Okay, that would be the cigarette butts thing again, huh?
Or what we eat, or what we drink, or what we do. I mean, changing behavior is not easy.
Yeah, seatbelts were that for a lot of folks.
Yeah.
Texting now for others.
Right. Yeah.
No, texting while driving for others.
Yes, yeah, yes. Yeah.
So as you look at the landscape, what do you see out there? A major, major big problem? Or do you see people starting to pay attention and maybe ameliorating it to a certain extent?
Yeah. Well, I think if you bring it back to the North Coast and what's happening here, let's talk about what's going on with animal agriculture, for example. Because the drought has been so significant this year, the amount of available grass for feed is way down.
So that's why we don't see as many rhinos and giraffes?
Right, yeah. The white elephants either.
Yeah. Yeah, you're not as slow as you thought you were. It's 8:30.
Hey, community. Times are rough right now. Retail shops may be closing, but the bulk flower market is still open and moving fast. We here at Bayer can help turn your flower harvest into cash today. Call Bayer Extraction House at 707-693-2222. That's 707-693-2222. Don't miss out. It is time to sell. Bayer Extraction House, your flower selling powerhouse.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:36. We're back talking shop this morning with Yana Valakovic. You know, you may as well do the mom thing now because you don't want to be at the end of the show and go, ah, and have your V8 moment.
It's been June, and June's the time of graduations, and my first child graduated from high school this last month. So been a good and momentous time. Had family come in, whole thing. Felt a little bit normal.
Good. Mm-hmm. Now let's do the proud mom instead mm-hmm. of just the regular mom. I mean, she did more than just graduate.
That's right. She's a very modest individual. So she graduated as the valedictorian from Arcata High School.
And got into a program that's kind of skinny tough to get into.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. What do you say? You know, she worked super hard. You know, does the fruit fall far from the tree? Yes or no? But, you know, the reality is it's her. I mean, we fed and clothed her, but the motivation, the passion, the desire is really fun to watch in a young person, and it's going to be exciting to see where she goes. And I'm really thankful for is the community of organizations that supports young graduates and the scholarships that are coming through and how much people invest in our youth and are willing to make those investments. And so she's gotten a Farm Bureau scholarship, the Mark Reed scholarship from Green Diamond.
That was the biggie when I was going through, Mark right? E. Reed. I don't know who Mark Reed was.
The Reeds are the founders of Simpson Timber Company.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. She got a scholarship from Sanctuary Forest and Humboldt Redwood Company that's combined together. They work together to give scholarships. I don't know. It's just really fun to see all these things. And then there's several that have come through Humboldt Area Foundation. So my hat's off to, you know, all those that go to the fundraisers, contribute the money, and, you know, have laid the foundation with these large endowments to be able to provide support for our youth. Because what is it going to take to bring our youth back here, right? I mean, we can't just have, you know, intellectual flight and our youth leaving. We need them to come back. And so, you know, I'm hopeful that some of these contributions will help these kids realize how important this community is and will leave with a sense of passion. I couldn't get out of my daughter in her graduation speech the idea of how special this place is. She was uncomfortable about saying that publicly in front of the whole graduating audience because she thought they don't value that. She does, but she was uncomfortable making that statement.
That would explain that 350-mile rubber band you've got around her left leg?
No, not at all.
But that's not the reason she has that rubber band.
No.
More of a mom thing, okay.
No, her choice.
Well, and that's one of the things that we've talked a little bit with others about Humboldt turning into a poly.
Right.
Obviously we're going to be discovered by more kids.
Sure.
And there'll be that chance for them to stick around a little bit more. But the economic viability that represents
is
stunning,
really
I think.
Stunning. If the budget comes in the way it's projected to come in, it's
well, we got a week and a half here?
Well, no. I mean, the state was supposed to sign the budget by the 15th. You know, they didn't. They did a temporary appeasement. It seems like there's pretty broad support in Sacramento for the Polytech. So the Polytech has sort of two, I think, things that are really significant about it for us in our community. Well, many things, but financially, there's a bunch of one-time money for a lot of infrastructure improvements. But there's also a rather significant augmentation of permanent funds to HSU's budget, which has been long time coming, and you know, the program has really needed it. So permanent ongoing funding to be able to you know, infuse Humboldt State and not only develop but maintain the Polytech. you know, for my daughter's class, I mean, what I think is going to be interesting is where they'll be once these kids graduate from their first year degree. Will they come back now for the master's program because it's gotten even better and even more robust as a result of HSU transitioning to a polytech?
Are polys UCs? Or are they still state schools?
No, they're still state. I mean, polytech essentially means it's the learn by doing model, which since I'm grounded in 4-H, since we run the 4-H program, I find when you read the definition of a polytech, it's basically what it's like to be a 4-H'er, that it's experiential learning, that it's applied, and that it's the learn by doing framework for how you...
It doesn't mean that they're going to have to change the school colors, does it?
I don't think so. But,
okay.
But I think what it will do will align programs better and maybe help break down some of the silos. So, Humboldt has a really good business program, for example, and the way that that business program can sort of realign itself across divisions and across disciplines to provide applied experience while going through the...
Yeah, a good solid base foundation, right? For everybody. Well, in conjunction with the fiber optic line blowing through town.
I know there's a couple cool things that are... I mean, that fiber optic line was pretty important for HSU's...
I would figure that was a significant cattle prod.
Yeah.
To be able to get them to the point where they are now.
Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, we need it. We need to be able to... We need the bandwidth. I mean, it's the modern age.
Going Irv Renner on me, huh? Yep. KIS News and Information Time. It's 8:41.
The Redwood Region Economic Development Commission wants you to know that local economic development agencies, business resource organizations, financial institutions, and jurisdictions are working together to provide resources for the COVID-19 pandemic. For more information, go to northcoastsbdc.org or call the OES Business Hotline at 268-2527. 268-2527.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 8:46. We're back talking shop this morning with Yana Valakova. Drought, what do you see? How's this one going to play out this year? Any crystal balls?
What I worry about is some of the smaller community services districts and whether they're as prepared as they need to be for, the domestic water uses that are needed. A lot has been learned since 2014, which was the last drought we had. And so I do think there have been some rather significant infrastructure investments in each of these communities, especially Rio Del, for example, which has junior water rights compared to towns like Scotia, which have senior water rights. So, when it comes down to conservation strategies and if we get to those difficult places, how do you meet those things? So, I think we're moving the meter as communities, and, droughts give us an opportunity to kind of reflect on our water demands, our water needs, and, how to, involve wise water use. But I think the challenge for agriculture is that there's no easy way to buy feed or buy additional water or, other things to rescue us, because we're sitting in a context of the whole American West in drought.
Inflation also was in there.
Cost of transportation.
That's why I was saying gas prices and getting the, even if it was here, getting it here.
Well, there just is no feed that's available. So we've seen, the ranching community sort of reduce their herds to be able to weather the storm that we're going into, in essence. And so the crystal ball question is, when does the fall rain come? And hopefully soon and not late.
What about timber harvesting? Are we seeing timber harvest plans go through? Are they at an accelerated pace because there's this demand for wood? Is it less because some folks don't want people out in the woods because of the fire danger situation? Is there any change there?
I mean, markets are what drive interest in harvesting, and markets are up right now. So, yeah.
You've heard.
I've heard, right? Yes. You've seen the meme, "Take me somewhere expensive, honey," and it's they're dining in a lumber yard. We're seeing quite a bit of movement there. There just aren't enough registered professional foresters out there to facilitate the demand right now.
Is that a long-term condition?
It's a long-term condition. It's kind of the cycle of, one generation retiring and not enough people that have moved in. And I think also just frustration that, is forestry a viable profession? Well, the answer is absolutely. And whatever,
but the perception of it may not
have been
accurate.
There. We need a new TV show that shows that being a forester is cool, right?
Okay, you're implying that there was one.
Well, there's been some shows about park rangers and other things.
Oh, okay.
That, you know, like people that work in the woods are cool. And, you know, what do we see? We see crime detectives, law enforcement is what you tend to watch on TV, and you know, how do you make this profession look interesting?
So we need NCIS Humboldt?
Yeah. Right. Well, that might be still crime detectives.
Yeah.
But, you know, the message is that these are great careers and we get to spend our time in the woods, you know, boots on the ground.
Long term,
dog in your truck, you know.
Yeah.
Life's good.
If demand was met, how much larger would the approved levels of harvesting have to be? Any idea? Double, triple, quadruple?
I don't know. Well, that's looking at the whole wood basket. I mean, we're the largest timber producing region in California, but we don't even meet California's demands with wood from California.
Well, yeah, you see them coming in from Oregon and Washington.
Well, I mean, we our wood basket, in essence, really includes Canada, Washington,
right.
Oregon. So it's a little more complicated and all that. I don't know the answer to the question. I'll have to research it. That's an interesting thing to think about.
Or if it could even be achieved.
I don't think it could be achieved. I think we're too big of a state with 49 million people.
Well, and with the building pressures that there are.
Yeah.
It would be interesting to see.
Yeah.
And what would that mean for each individual processing or mill?
Yeah. You know, back to drought, though, I think if I could give any message today, and that is that, you know, water needs and water usage and water availability is uneven across the state. And we're really blessed with a lot of available water in general. And so conservation is always important, but we don't need to apply what's happening in the Central Valley to here.
Is there still that thought? Or I thought the state was kind of regionalized a little bit.
Well, we're more regionalized this year, but in general. But just to understand that we are blessed more so than other parts of the country.
All you have to do is drive about an hour either direction, and you start to get that sensation.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It will be interesting to see. Pressures on land use.
Yeah.
If someone harvests the trees, there's going to be a thought process that, well, let's convert the land over for homes.
Sure.
And, you know, what is it, interface or, you know.
The wildland urban interface.
Yeah. Yeah, I know the fire guys talk that one, like one word.
Wooey.
Yeah.
Wooey, as we call it, the wildland urban interface.
But kind of pushing that a little bit out, is that going to be where the demand and the pressures are, or do you think there's going to be pressures for replanting different stocks because we need that for the resource?
I think the sustained pressure is really in the development of ag land for houses. It's easier.
Right. Trees or corn, it doesn't matter. It's the same.
Yeah.
Okay. See, we got all the way through, and we didn't talk about that property on Harris. The PG&E cut down without the permits.
Didn't.
Interesting how we danced that one, huh?
Yeah, we did dance that one. show needs a visual to go with it.
And we'll continue. No, I'm not sure. I've had people ask not to have an in-studio camera when I'm in there. So, yeah, we'll work on that. Maybe we get one of those little, like, cutout faces and I could put that in front of me.
Right. Because maybe our voices are better.
Jeez, look, Rock Hudson.
Born for radio.
Yeah. Well, then who would remember Rock Hudson anymore, huh?
Right.
Yeah. All righty. Thanks for coming by.
My pleasure.
It was fun.
It was.
See everybody tomorrow.